Hi, I'm Nate, co-host of the Builders Hub podcast. Today, I'm really excited to be interviewing my fellow co-host, Jeremy, because when he isn't recording this podcast, his day-to-day is helping Soligo customers solution around a topic that we discuss a lot here at Soligo, which is EDI, or Electronic Data Interchange. So we're going to get into the nitty-gritty and talk about it. But Jeremy, I know you're a co-host, but maybe you can introduce yourself and then answer something we always ask our guests. Just tell me something that's not on your LinkedIn profile.
Sure. Sure. So Jeremy Irwin, I'm a principal solutions consultant here at Soligo. As you mentioned, Nate, primarily focusing on that e-commerce, EDI, order to cash use case. Something that's not on my LinkedIn is I actually was a magician when I was about 17 years old until I was about 22. So at one point in time, it was on my LinkedIn, but I've since removed it to make it a little more professional.
You know, that's a shame, Jeremy. I did know that you were a magician, but it's still just like my fun fact when I think about you is that Jeremy is doing, you know, close-up magic for me after he solves my integration use cases. So, all right. So let's get into it. Let's EDI, you know, I defined it electronic data interchange, but like, you know, you've worked in that kind of space for a long time, not just here at Soligo, but I'd love for you to kind of just give me a high level understanding as someone who maybe I don't know anything about EDI or I work with EDI, but it's really, I just see like the back end or the front end of you of it. What is it? How is it used? And where have you seen it kind of in your career?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, EDI is really a standard language for two business systems to communicate with one another. So where I typically seen that and where I have the most exposure to it is in the retail space or logistics space where suppliers are shipping their products into the Walmarts, the Targets of the world, but they need a standardized way to do that, right? So traditionally, EDI, it has been that standard. I like to call it the non-standard standard because all trading partners have their own variation, but it is really just a standard, a format. Where these businesses can communicate those business documents in an effective and compliant manner.
Got it. That makes sense. And what I always found fascinating is it's like this hidden language for commerce behind the scenes. So like as a consumer purchasing something, I may never realize that EDI is what's going on behind the scenes, but it's oftentimes how businesses are talking to each other. And so we hear, you know, like you mentioned, every trading partner might have its different kind of format that it follows. Can you maybe explain what you mean by a trading partner and maybe some of the differences that you might see throughout EDI?
Yeah, absolutely. So with a trading partner is really, you know, anyone you're doing business with. You could be procuring raw material, you know, you could be procuring goods to resell. It could be even customers that you're selling to. And when we talk about customers, those could be direct-to-consumer customers, but they could also more commonly be those brick-and-mortar locations like the Walmarts, the Targets of the world. And so, you know, when they're exchanging these business documents, these purchase orders and notifying them of shipments, so on and so forth, you're 100% correct there, Nate. You and I don't know about those things, right? We don't know how those products are getting on the shelf, but that's happening all behind the scene. What I used to say when I got into, you know, the EDI space was kind of remind me of the Matrix code that kind of flows behind the screen, right? Except every single character within that message means something, and that something is relevant to both of those entities.
Got it. And we say document, right? It's the D is electronic data interchange, but often we use the term document. So like, it's not an email, you know, we think of a document as like a Word document, but what do you mean when you say document or message? What is actually being exchanged?
Usually it's going to be things like purchase orders, notifications that a shipment has left the dock or the warehouse, invoices, ways to adjust invoices with credit debit adjustments, inventory advices, so on and so forth. And that's really just focused on that order to cash use case. There's EDI transactions out there for both healthcare, mortgages, you know, railway, transportations, motor, plane, vessel, et cetera. So there's an EDI format and EDI document or transaction for really any transaction or document that would be exchanged between businesses, whether that's between a carrier, a supplier, a logistics firm, et cetera.
Got it. So in the world of EDI, there's you know, someone sending a document, there's someone receiving a document, there's maybe acknowledgements that occur. So would you say that, you know, even if I'm a business that I don't have an EDI, like I'm not using EDI, if I want to create a relationship, that it might be enforced upon me to use EDI, and then I have to solution it. So there's kind of two sides to every transaction, and a business needs to be thinking about if it needs to use EDI, what it kind of could look like. Would you agree with that?
Exactly. And to your point, you know, all trading partners are different, and on the flip side of that, all ERPs are different, right? So, or OMSs, WMSs, whatever system you're using on the back end, they all have different architectures. They all have different formats of their data and records or objects. What I like to say is, most times the people are mandated, or companies are mandated, to do EDI, and that's how they find out what EDI is. But, you know, when you're configuring an integration or exchanging business documents in that way to really any of your business partners, it's important that you're thinking through the business process side, but also how that's mapping over into what's required from, you know, from the trading partner.
Got it. And I got a two kind of part question for you, because you said something really interesting there. So you mentioned like ERPs, OMS, you know, I can extrapolate 3PL, your warehouse, they're all different. So ultimately though, that data needs to end up in those applications is what you're saying. So like EDI is the transfer of that data, but the users are really interacting with the applications like the ERP to do their business process or work with the data. So, you know, how do you think about how EDI needs to land in these? And then let's say you don't have, you know, someone handling that. Can I, as a user of an ERP, read an EDI document, or is it hard to read? Like, do I manually enter it? What's kind of, as a human, how do you interact with EDI?
Yeah. So what I like to say is the ideal scenario for EDI integration or automation is that you never see the EDI documents, right? You're working out of the systems that you know and you love. And you know, whether that's an ERP, a WMS, you're working with the records and with the processes that you know on a day-to-day basis. Now, when there's an error or an exception that may pop up, maybe your business partner, you know, incorrectly keyed in an item number, right? So that's failing out. It's important that you are able to obtain the data around that EDI document or transaction, so you can kind of follow the breadcrumbs to trace it back to the source to see what went awry. But most times, users should be working out of the systems that they're familiar with. When it comes to, you know, reading, your second question, reading or understanding EDI, there are users out there that could look at an EDI document or an EDI message and say, yes, I know what that is. That means, you know, this is our UPC number or our item number. But that's really where the translation or transformation step really comes into play for these end users, right? Instead of needing to know that the BEG03 is the purchase order number on an 850 document, they're able to pretty plainly see in plain text on a JSON payload, hey, this is the purchase order ID or the purchase order number. So, you know, with that method, with the transformation happening where users can actually see under the hood, being able to view those transactions, it's much more easier for those line of business users.
Got it. And we're going to talk a little bit about it, but there's a legacy way that we see EDI handled and kind of a more modern way in this, you know, world of SaaS applications and APIs and now agents and AI. I'm curious if we could just take a step up the whole landscape. So you said someone like may misenter something. If you're maybe making a purchase order, you're the one trying to buy from your supplier. Is it typical that they're entering an order like in an Ariba or on a website, and then that gets converted to EDI because it's a standard format that then the EDI document transfers the data and then it gets retranslated into their application? Is that a landscape we see, or is there alternative routes? I'm just curious, like what kind of is the full landscape in which EDI is just this link between the businesses?
Yes. And a lot of the applications that you mentioned, right, like the Aribas of the world, supplier onboarding is what they focus on. And so when these companies are looking to purchase from their suppliers, it could be that they're leveraging a platform like a, you know, I'm just going to say a Coupa or an Ariba or a Talia out there, where, you know, they're able to purchase these goods and they have that platform where items were listed out, they have those connections already established. But on the back end of that, you know, there's multiple methods to connect in, one of those being EDI. So really EDI is going to be, you know, the communication method or protocol that would be leveraged in those examples. Now, you could always leverage like an API for like the Aribas and the Coupas of the world. But when you're connecting with those suppliers, traditionally, it's going to be EDI. Could be a portal that they're entering that information in, which, you know, we can start talking about punch out catalogs and things like that, which may not be relevant for this conversation. But, you know, EDI is going to be the, what I'll call it like the highway to communicate those between those two businesses.
Got it. The applications are almost for our benefit, right? As a human, to be able to read text and click buttons and visualize what's happening. And then this EDI is that bridge between the different kind of, I might be doing a business action in an application, but EDI ensures that the format is consistent and that you can have, you know, regulations and controls because, you know, the same data and the same format is being delivered. So EDI is ensuring basically that the rules are followed for when you're making an order, when you're acknowledging something.
Exactly. And really, EDI shouldn't be another application that you're logging into, right? You shouldn't have to log in to manually input that you've shipped out an order and providing, you know, the different packages and UCC or SSCC numbers associated to them. That shouldn't be a manual effort because I'll say 99% of the time, these companies are leveraging ERPs, WMSs, where that data resides. So automation makes most sense there.
Yeah, definitely. Especially if you're going to try and scale, right? Like you can't depend on a person to be entering a highly structured document. One, they make mistakes, and two, they can only, you know, create so many. So you need some sort of automation. So we're going to talk, I want to kind of touch on this a little bit. We're going to talk about some more three-letter acronyms because you talked about the connectivity, but like we hear a lot about there's different kind of ways, protocols that you connect with EDI. So, you know, mm-hmm. VAN, value added network, AS2, can you just kind of touch on the differences when someone might use one or the other? Or is it a lot of this is just mandated by the partner that you're connecting with and businesses really just need a way to adapt to the requirements they have?
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned three of the most common, I'll say, that we see here in the States. First one being VAN, right? Value added network. This is what I like to refer this to as kind of like the post office, right? Where I'm sending Nate's company a document or a letter, right? I send that to the post office. The post office says this is for Nate based out of Tennessee, right? And that post office is able to deliver that to the correct mailbox. Essentially, that's what a VAN's doing, right? They're the mailman that's then going to deliver those documents to the correct individual based on their mailbox, right? Their ISA ID or their GS ID or a mixture of the both. The next being AS2. And AS2 is what you'll see the Walmarts of the world using, right? So this is applicability statement 2. I always struggle saying that for some reason, but that's the most direct and secure connection that you can establish there. So it's a direct connection to the trading partner. With that comes AS2 certificates that need to be established, so on and so forth. Last being FTP, right? Pick your flavor of FTP. SFTP, FTP, FTPS, which is really just, you know, the traditional file pickup, file drop off to and from the trading partner. Now, there are trading partners out there that support multiple methods as well. So, you know, you may say, hey, I can't support AS2. And that trading partner says, well, we can connect to you via a value-added network.
Got it. Yeah, I didn't even try to explain what AS2 meant. That's too complicated for me. So I'm glad you gave a shot there. So that was interesting. You say that some trading partners have flexibility where they can say, hey, okay, we'll do an FTP or SFTP with you because you can't handle the AS2 offering that we have. Do you think that ever hinders business or hurts that relationship in any way? Or is this pretty typical where both parties are willing to kind of be flexible? I'd imagine if you're like connecting to Walmart has kind of all the leverage there and you basically just need to comply to what Walmart wants. Or do you find that there's flexibility kind of in the EDI space for multiple methods of connectivity?
There's definitely flexibility around multiple methods of connectivity that I've seen. When it comes to being compliant with the EDI specification set forth by the trading partner, there's a little more They're a little more strict about that, where they'll issue things like chargebacks for late ship notices and non-compliant ship notices, things like that. But with the connectivity method, they're really looking to, they're looking to find efficiencies within their own processes. And when I say they, I'm really talking about these bigger companies, these bigger trading partners, the Walmarts, the Targets, right? So by doing EDI, they're gaining efficiencies where they don't have to have users reviewing every single transaction or reviewing every single package that arrives at their docks. They have EDI, an EDI breadcrumb trail of everything around that. So they're becoming more efficient, and they hope that by mandating their suppliers to do the same, that they become more efficient as well, right? And then it's just an automated communication of those documents.
Yeah, and you said you use the words chargeback, which I think we may have mentioned. Can you explain what a chargeback is and why it's good or bad, or when it would occur for a business?
Sure. Yeah. So, but the one that I've seen most commonly in the past is non-compliant ASNs or late ASNs, advanced ship notices, which is an EDI 856. This notifies the trading partner that the shipment has left the warehouse. You can expect these many packages. Within these packages are these products. So when they scan the barcode, when it shows up at the facility or at the warehouse or DC, they know exactly what's in there. They know exactly where to put that within the warehouse. Everything's figured out for them. So as you can imagine, when even there's a minor typo or a late ASN, everything's held up within these DCs or warehouses. So what they do is they actually fine or impose a financial penalty on their suppliers for being non-compliant with, the specifications and guidelines that they set within their vendor onboarding.
So if you're a supplier, this is really relevant to you, where this actually would affect, this is a cost that you're incurring for inaccuracies. So there's a
Exactly.
financial kind of burden here if you don't get this right. And what's the scale of these? Is this like, oh, it's a $10 speeding ticket, or does it scale with the quantity or quality of the goods? How is that typically charged?
Yeah. I'm not going to mention any names, but in the past, I worked with a company that produced baby goods, right? So like strollers, cribs, things along those lines, and they were connecting with Toys R Us, RIP. But with Toys R Us, they were not receiving their ASNs for some reason, right? They imposed $400,000 of chargebacks on this client, and that was just one relationship. So to your point, Nate, right, when you start expanding that out, most of the companies that we talk about, whether that's a distributor and wholesaler, if we're talking to a brand, if we're talking to a manufacturer, they're connecting with 10 plus trading partners most times. So when you extrapolate that out to those 10 trading partners, you're looking at a $4 million charge right there for just not sending or not being compliant with the EDI specifications.
Yeah, and I imagine if you're making a mistake with one trading partner, you're probably repeating that with all of them. So it's not
Right.
unreasonable to think that you're going to be hit with these chargebacks across your chain. It's probably not just the financial. I imagine, if you're buying from a supplier, yeah, you don't really want to be charging them this money. You really want the goods. So it's
Exactly.
the financial cost of this, but also the relationship cost. It's like, okay, I'm just going to go find another supplier. You guys aren't worth doing business with. I'd imagine that's like the next step of this, where it's like, yeah, we had to recoup some of this cost because you messed up, but like ultimately, like the supplier's whole business model could be at risk if they don't get it right, right? Simple mistake with real consequences. Yeah.
Yeah, and it impacts their vendor scorecard, right? So these trading partners have vendor scorecards saying, yes, they met the SLA for fulfillment, or for sending us valid purchase order acknowledgments, ASNs, whatever it may be. There's a scorecard that's tied to that. So to your point, Nate, it absolutely does negatively impact that. And once you drop below a certain threshold, right, those trading partners may look for additional vendors or suppliers in that same, vertical.
That makes sense. Yeah. I'd imagine it's not something you want to mess around and leave to chance when this is so directly tied to the revenue and kind of survival of your company. So I kind of alluded to this, but could you maybe lay out the landscape of legacy EDI versus more modern EDI and where kind of the line is drawn? Is it really different, right? This is a technology that's been around for decades. So it's like the technology might be the same, but what's really different between what we would classify as like a legacy provider versus a modern provider?
So with legacy, there's really three buckets that, that I'll call out. Legacy has, I'm going to call it like legacy or traditional EDI build outs, which are going to be custom, right? So you're building this from scratch. You could leverage something like, a JAMS SSIS type job to move those files, whether it be from like a database to an FTP, something like that, right? But it's all managed, maintained by internal users. You're responsible for going out, finding the network, et cetera, right? So really think of that as building your own translator and transmission tool so that you're able to communicate with your trading partners. The other would be standalone EDI, right? Standalone EDI would be, there's companies out there that do offer non-integrated versions, which, if we go back to my earlier point, EDI is supposed to be integrated or automated, right?
Yeah, I can imagine that's not really useful, right? It's like you
right.
ultimately this data needs to live somewhere that users can interact with it. So yeah.
Exactly, right. And those standalone systems, oftentimes they do have capabilities or APIs, but you need another tool, right? So you have multiple links within that chain, where you have, an EDI translator, you have, it could be an integration platform or building it out custom, but you have multiple links within that chain. Then the third bucket under that legacy is going to be managed service, right? A lot of the clients that I speak with leverage managed service EDI providers. Where we typically see that they are, they're falling short, and I don't want to say falling short, but where our clients want to really take control of EDI, right? They want to be responsible for how that data maps in and out of the ERP because they're making changes. Their consultants are making changes, right? So they want to have control over how that data is flowing, both inbound and outbound. And really, with those managed service providers, everything's locked down. So any change is going to be a support ticket. This is good if, managed service providers are especially good for, those smaller businesses that maybe they don't know EDI and maybe, they're forced to do EDI for, one or two trading partners. Those managed service providers bridge that gap of that expertise when it comes to EDI. When we talk about modern EDI, it's taking components of really all of those legacy solutions, but delivering them in a way that users are able to easily adopt, right? And I think that's the key of it there is the easily adopt piece. In the past, Nate, you mentioned this, right? EDI has been around for decades and it's still a struggle. For a lot of people. So with modern EDI, you gain the advantages of having those trading partners pre-configured or pre-built, right? So what I like to say is the heavy lifting is done on your behalf by the platform, meaning that when you're looking to connect to Walmart, Target, Dick's Sporting Goods, et cetera, those EDI specifications, those trading partner communication methods are already established on your behalf, right? But where users want more control is when there's a map change, a specification change, or when there's an integration change, they want to be able to make that change within 5 seconds versus, spending a support ticket, sometimes waiting 5 days to do so. And that's what that modern EDI solution really provides is that more control under the hood access to all things around the EDI integration.
I that makes total sense. I'd imagine, where I kind of see, based on what you said, where I see this breakpoint is like this. It's kind of this desire. If you kind of iterate through it, it's like, do I want to build this from scratch myself? Do I want to manage this myself? And then is it flexible enough for me to use in my business? Because, I mean, we know, we talk to companies all the time. They change business processes. They want to start tracking new data. They want to do new reporting. They're offering up a new product. They want a new channel to open up. And so I'd imagine if you want to have kind of this agile business that's able to adapt to new things, you don't want to really be tied down to building something from scratch because we know that takes a long time to iterate. It takes a lot to maintain. And then, you really don't want to make a change once it's already built. And then the next stage is if I want to make a change, I'm dependent on my third party vendor who controls this entire process to make the change. And then like the modern solution is to have control, but to make sure that it's still you know, easy to maintain in a sense that it's like, it's not built from scratch. And that's where like having pre-built done would solve that. And I am curious, we talked about the landscape a little bit of like, application moving the EDI data between, and then going back in. So in this modern approach, you know, we talked to lots of companies that have, you know, best in breed SaaS apps or custom apps, and everybody's, you know, it's API, API, API. Where does that link occur between an EDI document, which is, you know, the structured text through the connectivity, and then it ultimately has to end up as, you know, an API call to your ERP or your WMS? That has to be occurring in the platform, right? But a platform has to be doing that. That's where you mentioned, like, if you don't have this configured end to end, you have to buy another tool for that connection. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. What I typically say here at Soligo is that we're the plumbing between the applications, right? And that's really when we talk about application to application integration, if we're talking Shopify to an ERP, something like that. But when it comes to EDI, we're still going to be the plumbing, right? So if we use the example of extracting an invoice out of the ERP, we're still extracting that invoice from the ERP, but that plumbing is transforming that from, you know, whether it's a Microsoft Business Central invoice or if it's a NetSuite invoice, we're still taking that invoice record as it, you know, as it's fetched through the API, but that plumbing's transforming it into that X12 document, right? So whether we needed to send that via FTP, AS2, or a value-added network, that transformation's happening within the integration. But users still have an eye on, well, how is the PO number being transformed into what I need to send on my 810? So they still have that visibility into the exact transformations that are happening on those EDI documents.
And, you know, as we talk about like a platform to maintain this and like how we think about it, it's like, you know, this is off the cuff here, Jeremy, but we can't talk about technology without talking about like the elephant in the room, which is AI, right? It's, you know, incorporated into everything now. And I get this question a lot. It's like, how do I incorporate AI into my EDI automations? And my take is I'm always hesitant to put something that could, you know, hallucinate or have its own reasoning in a very structured process like EDI, right? It's like EDI was designed so that it has standards and it's repeatable and it's scalable. So where do you see the relationship between EDI and AI? Is it on the maintenance front? Is it on the build side? Do you incorporate AI in the flow? What are you kind of thinking about when you're thinking about this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think AI is front and center in everyone's mind. I do think it could be used on both the manage as well as, you know, the configuration or the build side. Now, I'm not one to throw AI at every solution, much like you mentioned, or AI as a solution at every problem, Nate. But this is where, if we first talk about configuration, right? A majority of the time is spent configuring the integration with the trading partner, but also receiving back errors, right? Hey, well, you didn't send this value in the BIG03 on your invoice, right? And oftentimes users are looking at that, then looking at the spec, making the adjustment, right? Whereas by leveraging AI to build that out, something like, you know, Soligo CLI to build that out, it gets you 90% of the way there, if not more. Right. But then you're able to refine as, you know, as you're making changes to the ERP, the WMS, et cetera. So I think on the configuration or the building side, AI could be of huge assistance there when it comes to, you know, mapping and transformations and such. But then also on the manage side, when we talk about 997s, which we didn't really get into much here, functional acknowledgements, right? Some trading partners, they require them. I'll say all trading partners require them within 24 hours. And when you're sending a transaction to a trading partner like a Walmart, they'll respond with that 997. So when you haven't received one in 20 hours, proactive alerts around missing 997s. All right. So a lot can be incorporated there.
And I'm curious, Jeremy, like what you've seen, because when I talk to people, like all the things we talk about with EDI, it's like when you want to move to a modern solution, you talk about, like, you know, visibility, control for your business, but there's almost this like barrier or this momentum with legacy. It's like, well, it's already stood up. It is working. We have all these problems, but, and we want to be, you know, use a modern solution, but there's like so much risk inherent in the switch here. So like, I see AI as kind of cutting through some of that tape and shortening the time frame that you can go live with a solution, and then you're still getting like the best in breed reliability and the repeatable assets of a platform, not using AI in the process, but to help stand up the process. And that's typically enough to kind of lower that barrier to moving to a more modern tech stack. Are you seeing something similar, or, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of hesitancy when it comes to, you know, migrating EDI, and I think that a lot of that has to do with the pain that EDI is, right? Configuring yeah. EDI, learning EDI, and then managing EDI. It's very painful for the users that have to do it, especially if that's not their area of expertise. So I definitely think that. By allowing the repeatable assets or repeatable components on the platform, that expedites the process drastically. But then also allowing users to be able to view EDI as really just exactly what it is, a business document, right? Not mm-hmm. needing to know segments, elements, qualifiers, so on and so forth. Putting that in a way that they can understand it is really what's most impactful, I think. And that migration, you know, we talk about a migration, like moving from a managed service provider into something like a modern EDI solution. That's where, you know, you could look at a phased approach of migrating 3 trading partners, 5 trading partners, getting those assets in place so that then your team can start rolling additional new trading partners or existing trading partners over onto the modern EDI solution.
And Jeremy, do you think, you know, for all of the pain that we see organizations have around EDI, you know, if they're using a legacy or a managed kind of provider to manage this, and they would say, I actually don't even want a modern EDI solution because I don't want to do EDI at all. It's too painful regardless. Do you think EDI is going away in favor of like APIs and, you know, agents talking back and forth to each other, or is it always going to be kind of prevalent, especially in the commerce space, but all these other industries you talked about, healthcare, you know, mortgages, freight, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So I always make an analogy. I think I've had this analogy for probably 3 or 4 years now. But when the Evergreen ship got stuck in the Suez Canal, that it was a major disruption to supply chain. I ordered something and it's taken 3 months to get here. So that was very prevalent back then, right? And that was just off one ship, right? If we were to change from EDI to API, I always say, multiply the impact of that, you know, the ship getting stuck in the Suez Canal, multiply that by 10 plus, right? Because it would be that drastic. Because if you think of all of the suppliers that are connecting with Walmart alone, right? You walk in your Walmart and look at all of the different products sitting on the shelf, not easily probably 1,000 plus, just off the top of my head that I could probably name, right? And that means that all of those would need to reintegrate, retest, and that's just for one trading partner. So all of the different retail locations out there, all of the different logistics companies, transportation companies out there, it would be a major impact and a major migration plan for them to do that.
Yeah. And I kind of want to build up to this, because if you're listening to this and you hear about all this pain and these legacy EDI, like, don't want to scare people that this is like, you know, a dark art. Like, there is light at the end of the tunnel for, you know, with a modern solution, you can resolve a lot of the pain that people are having. But what about like a business that doesn't have EDI now, but wants to expand to somebody that requires EDI? Like, I want to sell my products with Walmart. I want to sell my products at Costco. These are, you know, huge chains. Or on the flip side, I'm going to start a new product. I want to buy from suppliers. They only do EDI. Is the right choice to start from the ground up with a modern solution, order to, you know, build up? Is it business dependent where you have managed service providers out there? Or is it just better to own this and have control from the beginning and kind of build that muscle within an organization?
That's a phenomenal question, Nate. I would say that the beauty of a modern EDI solution is that you can still have managed services alongside it, right? Meaning that you could find a partner that specializes in the ERP of your choosing and, you know, X12 EDI or EDIFACT EDI for international or global standards, right? So you're not sacrificing one for the other, right? So if there's a company out there that says, hey, you know, we're just starting with three trading partners, we think modern EDI is, you know, way too much for us right now. For those companies to manage, it may be a little too much, but that's where the managed service aspect comes into play, right? So finding a partner that is skilled, again, within that ERP, managing the EDI services, where they're able to assist in building out new integrations with onboarding new trading partners, supporting day-to-day EDI transmissions, so on and so forth. So you're not sacrificing anything, you know, going with the modern EDI solution. I would actually recommend more companies out there investigate modern EDI solutions so that they're not waiting, you know, sometimes 6 weeks to onboard new trading partners.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I can just imagine as the business processes around EDI, to me, they're just so closely linked with like revenue and the relationships you would have and just like how your business is able to make money and sustain itself. Like, this is probably not something best left up to a third party that you're dependent on. Like, there is probably this middle ground of having a modern solution that's not a total black box to you for something as critical as your relationships with your trading partners, but having, you know, a trusted partner alongside you that's able to, you know, resolve any of the technical details, you know, in a timely manner with the expertise they have without losing, you know, total control over your revenue streams. It's just got to be a critical analysis by any business that's trying to sell, you know, in commerce or even evaluate some of these other industries as well.
Yeah. And one thing that you mentioned there, Nate, was about, you know, third parties managing, right? And really the difference that I would say between, you know, whether it be like a consultant or a third party ISV versus, you know, a managed service EDI provider is, you know, those consultants know the ins and outs of your ERP. They know the ins and outs of your business processes. They know the ins and outs of your vertical in your industry, food and beverage versus apparel versus sporting goods, right? Whereas, you know, the managed service aspect, it's one size fits all, right? Where those integrations, whether it's with Microsoft Dynamics Business Central, NetSuite, Sage Intacct, it's a base integration, not customized or not implemented based on your specific industry or vertical or even business process.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, I mean, to kind of recap all of this, like, EDI is not going away. It really is prevalent, especially in commerce, right? It's this kind of language between all of these organizations. And, you know, we hear lots of horror stories of people that use legacy solutions or don't have control themselves. And, you know, that puts their business at risk. So if you're listening to this and kind of evaluating, like, I do have EDI problems or I need to figure this out because this is, you know, strategically critical to my business, like, that modern approach is going to give you the most control and the most flexibility with the least amount of pain. And so that's really cool that there is a new solution for this super legacy old technology that, as you know, far out as EDI has been used. So Jeremy, thank you for, you know, being my guest this time, fellow co-host, but, you know, coming as a guest. So I got to ask you the final question, you know, what's a project you're excited about right now? Doesn't have to be technical. What are you building?
Yeah. So since I went personal or non-professional for my stat that wasn't on LinkedIn, I'll also go personal or non-professional with what I'm building. So I'm currently actually building built-ins next to my fireplace to store all of my children's toys so that they're not just scattered throughout the corners of the house. And hopefully once I do that, then I can put some lighting in behind it as well and make it really, really set off that wall with the fireplace.
Oh, that's nice. That's super sweet. Yeah. I thought you were going to say, you know, you're going to put all your, you know, trophies up there from your magic competitions that you won earlier, but Your kids' toys,
no
that's a good
trophies.
option. Yeah.
Yeah, no trophies. No trophies for that, unfortunately.
Well, thank you, Jeremy. Really appreciate it. And thanks, everybody, for listening in to the Builder Sub podcast.
Thanks, Nate. Thanks, everyone.